We just gonna hop into the book. My baby's asleep and I gotta go to bed too, because I gotta get up and go to work in the morning. But here we go. Chapter 10. With the weekend came a welcome break from fire tower duty. Though Grandpa kept his daily ritual of trekking out of the tower, Bear and I got a few days off. Since Grandma wasn't on the schedule to work at the Y store that weekend, for the 2 days we'd get to spend together, Grandma B had planned all kinds of activities to keep me busy and make up for the time we didn't have together while she was at work. On Tuesday morning, we visited one of her friends and helped sort books for the used store sale she had coming up at the public library a few towns over. Poor Thistledew had neither a library nor a school of its own, so people had to travel a few dozen miles for books and education. Grandma's friend Joe had set out thick slabs of coffee cake for us as a show of appreciation, and he kept refilling my lemonade cup. Saturday afternoon, Grandma took me, Griffin, and Bear out fishing on Lake Vermilion, teaching us all kinds of skills and stuff about different fish and fishing skills. What? In order to help Griffin knock off all the requirements of his A Bear Goes Fishing badge, she brought a big baggie full of candy along on the boat and also packed up a little cooler with cold Cokes and root beer. I'd always thought fishing would be really boring, but with the never-ending candy and drinks and songs we sang this afternoon, I had a blast. The only dark spot was that Bear kept licking up all the fishy water at the bottom of the boat, which made his breath smell like death, and he was a big kisser. That night, Wendy invited me over to eat pizza and watch a movie with her and Griffin. It was super fun until I checked the time halfway through the movie and realized I've missed my scheduled daily FaceTime with my family. "Why didn't you tell me it was so late?" I blurted out, scrambling off the couch. Wendy yawned and wrapped her arm around Griffin. "I'm sorry, hon. I didn't realize you had to get back." I glared at Griffin as I gathered up my stuff and shoveled my feet into my shoes. He'd heard me talk about my evening check-in with my family plenty of times. He knew I couldn't miss it, that these calls were my only chance to connect with my own parents and my sister and feel like I still had something left from my real life anymore. I could feel hot, guilty tears springing into my eyes, but I wasn't going to let them fall. I was too mad. Griffin settled deeper into his mom's side. "Sorry, Maya. I forgot. Maybe you can try to call them now." "It's too late," I snapped. "Visiting hours are over, so they're not at the hospital anymore." I hated them both in that moment. Griffin and Wendy didn't understand what it was like to not have someone to cuddle with, to not have your family beside you when you were having a bad day. They didn't know what it was like to ruin your whole family's life and then let them down again because you were too busy having fun. "I missed my chance, and it's because I was here. And now my sister won't get to hear my voice today because I was with you." Wendy started to stand up to say something, but I didn't want to hear it. I had to go. Had to get out of there. I've been so wrapped up in my own life and fun that I let my sister down again. Feeling nauseous, I raced back to my grandma and grandpa's house and tried to FaceTime my parents, but no one answered the call. I spent the rest of the night lying in the dark in my burrowed den bedroom, weighed down by my guilt, the murky dark and the suffocating silence, reminding myself that I was the worst sister of all time. On Sunday, I stayed in bed until Grandma came in to check on me. "You alive in here?" she asked, pulling the curtains back. I hissed like a vampire would when the hit... Okay, oh no. Oh, I apologize. Gotta get comfortable. I'm reading with a flashlight, y'all. I'm sorry. A hint like a vampire would when hit with the cold, cruel light of death. Grandma laughed, even though I wasn't actually trying to be funny. What do you most want to do today? She asked, settling down on the corner of my pulled-out bed. Sleep, I whispered. Not an option. Try again. I won't make you go to church unless you want to. So it's your pick. Anything you want. Canoeing, hiking, go to the Wolf Center, go swimming, hit the library. She trailed off. What did I most want to do? I closed my eyes and considered this. I knew Grandma wanted me to pick something from her list of options. But if she wanted the truth, here it is. I want to go home. I want to see my sister. Grandma's face crumbled. Oh, hon, I know you do. I began to cry. I thought we were keeping you plenty busy, she said, sounding sort of desperate. Giving you fun things to do, to keep your mind off things back in Chicago. I let a sob slip out and hiccuped. You are. It's just that I miss her, and when you asked me what I want to do, you said that I can pick anything, and that's what I want. I'm afraid that's not an option, Grandma said. She looked sad to have to say it, but I could also tell from the look on her face that there wasn't any changing her mind. This whole summer had been decided without me, and I was at the mercy of my own terrible failures and the awful night that destroyed all our lives. Grandma sat there as I cried, rubbing my foot through the blankets. After a while, she said, get it all out, okay? She didn't seem to realize that no matter how hard or how long I cried, I'd never get it all out. When you're ready, I'll make you some breakfast and we can come up with a plan for the day. Do you like pancakes? Yes, I whimpered. I love pancakes. With chocolate chips or blueberries? She smiled at me, and I could tell she was grateful I had answered the question. Blueberries, please. Of course, she said, patting my foot again. Then she stood up, brushed at the front of her pants to get the wrinkles out, and returned to the kitchen. I lay there trying to calm myself. Eventually, I headed to the bathroom and washed my face. When I came out, I reminded myself that I was trying to be strong for my parents who wanted me gone right now, for my grandparents who were trying to make all of this easier for me, for my sister who hadn't asked for any of this to happen, and for me, because I wasn't willing to feel this way for the rest of my life. Because of all the promises I had made to myself and to Griffin over the past week, I actually managed to muster up the nerve to show up at our first swim class the following Tuesday evening. The sun now set late enough each day that they could hold the class in the after dinner hours. With all the unseasonably warm and dry spring weather, the lake water wasn't as cold as usual, so they were able to start lessons before school and even let out for summer. Everyone kept saying the lake's temperature was unusually warm for this time of year, but I didn't have any way to know what the normal and what wasn't. The idea of swim lessons in a lake seemed bizarre to me in general, but I guess that's how things work in a town without a pool. Also, the lessons were free. That seemed totally crazy too, coming from a city where almost everything cost a fortune. Griffin and I were going to ride out to the lake together, and his mom's car. It was the first time I had seen either of them since I had blown up and blamed them for my own mistake that weekend. I'm sorry I was rude to you the other night, I said as we loaded into the car. Wendy had been friendly enough when I met them at their house, but Griffin was much quieter than usual, and we each climbed into the back seat. It's okay, Wendy assured me, flashing me a quick smile in the rearview mirror. It's not, I said. It wasn't either of your fault, and I shouldn't have freaked out like that. I took a deep breath. It felt better to get it off my chest, even if it was embarrassing to admit I'd overreacted. I was just upset, and I kind of took it out on you guys. Griffin still didn't say anything. He was wearing a cute little life jacket over his swim trunks and rash guard. He refused to take the jacket off, even for the car ride. He just strapped his seatbelt right over the poofy life jacket and crossed his arms over his chest. "They can't make me take this off," he blurted out to no one in particular in a few minutes into the ride to the beach. Wendy and I exchanged a smile. "No one's going to make you take off your life jacket during the first lesson, little duck," Wendy assured him. "I won't even if they tell me to. I still won't," Griffin insisted. "Fair enough," his mom said. "But don't worry, because I'll be right there next to you if you need me," I promised. I guess this was enough to crack him. Griffin reached across the back seat and took my hand. I suppose this was his way of saying he forgave me. In that moment, he reminded me so much of my sister that it ached. I wonder if he realized I needed him just as much as he needed me. I looked over and smiled. He squeezed my hand in response. When we got to the beach, there were already a few other people gathered near the lifeguard chair. A couple of chatty older men told me they had signed up for lessons, hoping to improve their water confidence enough that they could start swimming laps around the bayous in the summertime. There were also two kids, both girls, who looked like they were in fourth or fifth grade, a lady who was somewhere between college and parent years, and a sullen-looking boy who was probably about my age. The most entertaining person there was a 4- and 5-year-old who kept escaping his dad's arms and making a run for the water. There were three teachers who would be leading the lessons. One was a really cute teenage boy who I hoped was assigned to my group. There was also a stern-looking middle-aged lady teacher and a big guy with a beard that looked like a giant bird's nest. We all introduced ourselves, talked about our swimming experience and goals, and then they broke us into groups according to the level and introduced us to our teachers. My group got the bearded guy, whose name was Evan. There were only four of us who would be working with Evan. Me, Griffin, and the two girls I'd guessed were in fourth or fifth grade. It turned out they were twins named Ellen and Hannah. They were living at a summer home on the lake with their mom for the summer, and they didn't like to talk to anyone except each other. "Summer people," Griffin explained in a whisper. "They're all weird and unfriendly. Think they're better than the locals." I gave him a look. "I'm a summer person," I reminded him. Griffin giggled. "You're different." I decided this was a pretty sweet compliment. At first, I was embarrassed that I'd been put into the little kid group, except the runaway 5-year-olds who was alone with the scary teacher. But I guess it made sense. I had been honest about my previous swimming experience. I'd had some lessons, but I didn't like to get my head wet, and I refused to swim in water that went up past my chest. Evan decided to start our first group lesson by putting us all in life jackets and letting us bob around to get comfortable just being in the water. At first, everything was going well. I borrowed a life jacket from the lifeguard tower, slipped it on, and started joking around with Griffin as we waddled into the water. But then, suddenly, I smelled smoke. We weren't in Grandpa's yard. The smoke didn't belong here. The smell of it, that feeling of something not right, flipped the panic switch in my head. My breath quickened. My heart started to race. I couldn't move. "Maya," Griffin said, tugging on my hand. "You okay?" All of a sudden, Evan barked out, "Hey, you gotta put that out." Something about my swim teacher's sharp, powerful shout kicked me out of my full-blown panic terror. I spun in circles in the ankle-deep water searching for the fire. There, all the way across the beach, a group of teenagers had lit a bonfire. It crackled up and popped in the warm evening air, sending sparks of orange embers and curls of smoke up over the water. As soon as I saw the flames, the feeling of being trapped took over. I was frozen in the water, locked inside the tight clutches of my life jacket. transported back to that night. The hot, acrid smell of the hazy charcoal of the fire, my sister screaming, the flames eating at her body, me pulling, tugging, always just a step behind. I didn't realize I was screaming and crying until Wendy had me in her arms. She ran across the beach, her eyes wide and confused. "It's okay," she said into my ear, clutching me close while trying to pull off my life jacket. "It's okay." It took everything in me not to throw up. Meanwhile, Evan had hustled over to the group of teens and dumped a bucket of water on their fire to put it out. From somewhere far, far away, I could hear him telling the kids that fires weren't permitted anywhere on the beach and that they could only be started in designated fire pits. Closer in, I could hear Wendy shushing me and Griffin asking her if I was going to be okay. I waited to see what Wendy would say, but she didn't answer because no one knew the answer to that question, not even me. Would I be okay? Would Amelia be okay? Would my family be okay? "She'll be fine," his mom said finally. I closed my eyes and rocked in Wendy's arms, wishing so much that it was my own mom and dad's arms around me, squeezing my shoulder. Wendy said, "Let's get you both home."